Manashahari. Yamuna Tira Vanashari Jaya Ratha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Gopidana Vallabha Girivaru Hari Jaya Gopijana Vallabha Kiri Varuthari Yashoda Nandana Vrajajana Randana Yashoda Nandana Brajajana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanashari Yamuna Tira Vanashari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Om Vishnu Pad Paramahansa Parivraj Acharya Shtotarishta Shri Shrimad Hesi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai Karantara Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Nitai Gaur Premanande Hari Hari Bho Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai All grace the assembled devotee All grace the assembled devotee All grace the assembled devotee Agarishta Shri Shri Guru Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 87, The Prayers of the Personified Vedas, text number 21. Word meanings, Duravagama, difficult to understand, Atma, of the self, Tattva, the truth, Nigamaya, in order to propagate, Tava, of you, Atta, who have assumed, Tano, your personal forms, Charita, of the pastimes, Maha, vast, Amrita, of nectar, Abdhi, in the ocean, Parivarta, by diving, Parishramanaha, who have been relieved of fatigue, Naparilashanti, do not wish for, Kechit, a few persons, Upavargam, liberation, Api, even, Ishvara, O Lord, Te, your Charana, at the feet, Saroja, lotus, Hansa, of swans, Kula, with the community, Sangha, because of association, Visrishta, abandoned, Griha, whose homes. Duragavagamatma-tattva-nigamayata-vata-tanos Charita-maha-mritabdi-parivarta-parishramana Parivarta-parishramana Na parilashanti kechir apavargame apishvarate. Kechir apavargame apishvarate. Charana saroja hansa kula sangha visrishta griha. Kula sangha visrishta griha. Duragavamatma tattva nigamayata vata tanos Charita mahamritabdi parivarta parishramana Na parilashanti kechirapavargam apishvarate Charana saroja hansa kula sangha visrishta griha. Duragava matma tattva nigamayata vata tano. Charita mahamritabdi parivarta parishramana Na parila shanti kechir apavargam apishvarate Charana saroja hansa kula sangha pisrishta griha. Dura bhagamatma tattva nigamayata vata tano. Charita mahamritabdi parivata parishramana Na parila shanti kechira pavargama pishvarate Charana sarojaṁ sa kula saṁya viśrishta griha Duragava matma tattva nigamayata vata tano Charita mahamritabdi parivarta parishramana Na parila shanti kechir apavargam apishvarate Charana saroja hansa kula sangha pisrishta griha
Ladies.
Duravagamatma tattva nigamayata vata tano. चरित महामृतादी परिभाष परिश्रमा न पैलशन्ति केचिरपवर्गमपि स्फुरते चरण सरोज हंस कुल संग विश्लिष्ट दुर्भा दुरागमात्मक निगमाय तवात तनोस् चरित महामतादी परिवर्त परिश्रमनाः न परिरशन्ति केचिरपवर्गमपि स्फुरते चरणसरोजहंस कुलसङ्गविशिष्ट. Translation: My Lord, some souls have gotten relief from the fatigue of material life by diving into the vast nectar ocean of your pastimes, which you enact when you manifest your personal forms to propagate the unfathomable science of the self. These rare souls, indifferent even to liberation, renounce the happiness of home and family because of their association with devotees who are like flocks of swans enjoying at the lotus of your feet. Purport. Ritualistic brahmanas, smartas, and impersonalists, mayavadis, always try to relegate the process of bhakti yoga to a relative or minor role. They say that devotion to the personality of Godhead is for sentimental persons who lack the maturity to observe strict rules or pursue the rigorous culture of knowledge. In this verse, however, the personified Vedas most emphatically declare the super-excellence of devotional service, clearly identifying it with Atma-tattva, the science of the self that impersonalists so proudly claim as their own domain. Srila Jiva Goswami here defines Atma-tattva as the confidential mystery of the Supreme Lord's personal forms, qualities, and pastimes. He also gives a second meaning for the phrase Atta-tano. Instead of meaning who assumes various bodies, the phrase can also mean he who attracts everyone to his transcendental body. The pastimes of Lord Krishna and his various expansions and incarnations are an unfathomable ocean of enjoyment. When a person comes to the point of complete exhaustion in his materialistic pursuits, whether he has been searching after material success or some impersonal notion of spiritual annihilation, he can gain relief by submerging himself in this nectar. As Srila Rupa Goswami explains in his textbook on the science of Bhakti Yoga, Sri Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, rendered into English by Srila Prabhupada as the Nectar of Devotion, one who tastes even a single drop of this vast ocean will forever lose all desire for anything else. Giving an alternative interpretation of the word Parishramanaha, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti comments that although the devotees of the Lord become fatigued after repeatedly diving into the endless waves and undercurrents in the ocean of the Lord's pleasure pastimes, these devotees never desire any happiness other than the Lord's service, even the happiness of liberation. Rather, their very fatigue becomes pleasure for them, just as the fatigue produced by sex indulgence is pleasurable to those addicted to sex. The Supreme Lord's pure devotees become enthused by hearing the charming narrations of his pastimes and feel impelled to dance, sing, shout out loud, kick their heels together, haven't done that one in a while, faint, sob, and run about like madmen. Thus they become too absorbed in ecstasy to notice any bodily discomfort. Pure Vaishnavas do not want even liberation, what to speak of other desirable goals, such as an exalted position as ruler of the heavenly planets. This degree of exclusive dedication is admittedly only rarely achieved in this world, as the Shruti speaking this verse indicate by the word kachit, a few. Not only do pure devotees abandon their hankering for future gain, but they also lose all their attraction for what they already possess, the common comforts of home and family life, the association of saintly Vaishnavas, the disciplic succession of masters, disciples, and grand disciples, becomes for them their real family, filled with swan-like personalities like Sri Shukadeva Goswami. These great personalities always drink the sweet nectar of service to the Supreme Lord's lotus feet. Many mantras of the Upanishads and other Shrutis openly declare devotional service to be superior to liberation itself. In the words of the Nrisimha Purvatapani Upanishad, Yang sarve veda namanti mumukshavo brahma varinascha. To him all the Vedas, all seekers of liberation, and all students of the Absolute Truth offer their obeisances. Commenting on this mantra, Sri Shankaracharya admits, Mukta api lilaya vigraham kritva bhajanti. Even liberated souls take pleasure in establishing the Supreme Lord's deity and worshipping him. The great rival of Acharya Shankara, Srila Madhva Acharya Ananda Tirtha, cites his own favorite Shruti mantras in this regard, such as Mukta hietam upasate, Muktanam api bhaktirhi paramananda rupini. Even those who are liberated worship him, and even for them devotional service is the embodiment of supreme bliss. And amritasya dhara bahudha dohamanam charanam no loke sudhitam dadhatu om tat sat. May his feet, which bountifully pour forth floods of nectar, bestow wisdom upon us who are living in this world. In summary, Srila Sridhar Swami prays, Tvat katamrita patho dhav, viharanto mahamudaha, kurvanti kritena ki chatur vargam trinopamam. Those rare fortunate souls who derive great delight by sporting in the nectar ocean of topics about you, consider the four great goals of life, religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation, to be more important, no more important than a blade of grass. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militamena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Maybe a few words about Sri Ramanuja Acharya. I was looking around for biographical material about him last night, and there seems to be lots of different stories that aren't all exactly the same. Apparently, several of his biographies were written centuries after his appearance, so there tends to be a certain bit of legend thrown in there. So, but it's interesting. He appeared in 1017. So that means the next year is his millennial. We had Prabhupada's centennial. So next year they'll be celebrating. We'll be celebrating Ramanujacharya's millennial. So that's something, isn't it? You lived 1,000 years after you were appeared in this world. People are still talking about you, discussing your philosophy, what you did, your life, and so on. So I kind of doubt in 1,000 years anyone will be talking about Nagaraj Das. But what a powerful, influential person 1,000 years later. He still has some standing. So Ramanuja, of course, his philosophy, as I said, this was 1,000 years ago. So this was after Shankaracharya. Shankaracharya was, his philosophy was absolute monism, Advaita philosophy. And it was prominent at that time. There was Vaishnavism also. There had been some Vaishnava Acharyas previously. Nimbarka and Vishnu Swami appeared earlier, before Ramanujacharya. But Shankaracharya's philosophy of Advaita Vedanta was prominent. But in fact, Ramanujacharya's spiritual master was an Advaita, follower of Shankaracharya. His we'll call him his spiritual master, his teacher, Yadava Prakash, when he first went to the Gurukul to study, his teacher was an impersonalist. And there was some falling out between them because Ramanujacharya didn't agree with his philosophy. In fact, this Yadava Prakash was so envious of him, he actually made a plan to kill him. And only because Ramanujacharya's cousin named Govinda found out about the plot, he told him about it. They were traveling, they were going to go visit the Ganges. And he told Ramanujacharya about this plot to kill him, so he left. So there's a story about that too. He didn't know where he was going. He had to make his way back somewhere. I don't know how far away he was from home, but he was just traveling, and he really didn't know how to get back to where he was from in South India, Tamil Nadu. But he saw two persons near a well, and they somehow they gave him some water to drink, and he fell asleep. And the next morning he woke up and looked around, and there he was, just near his home. Didn't know how he got there. So he was directed there. His name, Ramanuja, I read a couple of things about the source of this name. The word Anuja means a follower or one who is born after. Literally, Anuja means one who is born after. So I was thinking of this name before. I was thinking, Ramanuja. So that could be a name for Lakshman. And I thought it could also be a name for Krishna, actually, because Krishna was born after Rama, Balaram. But generally, I think it's considered to be Ramanuja, is a follower of Lord Ramachandra. So that was a name that he got later. But his philosophy is called Vishishtadvaita. So Advaita, it's Advaita, non-dualism, but Vishishta, with specifications and with varieties. So if you were to ask me the difference between a Chintya Veda Veda Tattva and Vishishtadvaita, I couldn't tell you the difference. They're essentially the same thing. In fact, I read the different descriptions of Ramanujacharya's philosophy, and I see them kind of explained in different ways, and they all seem to add up to the same thing, basically. Veda Veda. Simultaneous oneness and difference. But because Ramanujacharya was arguing specifically against the philosophy of Shankaracharya, so I don't know if he could, actually these terms for the philosophies of the Acharyas weren't coined by them necessarily. They were given later by later students. So this name was given to the philosophy of Ramanujacharya, Vishishta Advaita. So it's Advaita. It's not everything is one, Sarvam Kaluvidam Brahma, but still there's variety. So this Ramanujacharya today is his appearance day. So today's verse, before I'd been missing a lot of classes because I was sick, so I was thinking this verse, boy, it's really directly, it's spoken by the Upanishads, the Shruti Gana, personified Vedas, and it's directly about devotional service. And we often find in the Upanishads that that's not necessarily the case. So I looked back at the verses in this chapter, and I thought, well, they all seem to be speaking directly devotional service. And this, at least a lot of the verses here are directly the Upanishads. And maybe Vyasadeva, in compiling this particular literature, he took especially some of the teachings of the Upanishads that come right out and promote devotional service directly. They don't always do that. In fact, there's a nice section. As I was looking at this, I was remembering something I had read in the Brihadbhagavatamrita, some discussion about among the personified Vedas. So I looked it up, and it's in the section of the Brihadbhagavatamrita where Gopakumar is Lord Brahma. Of course, Gopakumar, he really gets around. So he not only goes to Brahma Loka, he becomes Lord Brahma. He gets that position. So while he's there, he hears sages speaking. Now, these sages are referred to as personified Vedas. Now, there's some I've seen discussion by Gopi Pranadhan Prabhu about what does this mean, personified Vedas, exactly. So one example, he gives a couple of explanations. One, he says, of course, everything is personified, just like Krishna's paraphernalia are personified, they're persons. So the Vedas are also persons. But we can also see it another way in that they're just so fully infused with the knowledge of these Vedas that they personify the books themselves. Just like we have the person Bhagavat and the book Bhagavat. So you have the Vedas and you have those persons who personify them just because they're completely full of them. And the only thing they speak is the subjects of these Vedas. So this on Brahmaloka, Gopakumar, he hears something about liberation, and so he's interested in what is that? Because he doesn't know. You know Gopakumar, if you know the story, he's very naive. He doesn't know, seem to know anything. You think, how could he not know that? So he's on Brahmaloka, and he's hearing for the first time about Upavarga, liberation. He's like, what is this? Anyway, what's this Upavarga? So this is, I'm just going to read, if you read, this is from the part two, or volume two, chapter two. It's called Jnana of Brihad Bhagavatamrita. It begins around verse 170, 180, something like that. I'm just going to read the translations here for some of these verses. They're very illuminating commentaries, so you might want to look at it. But this is a translation from that section. Once, hearing the residents of Brahmaloka glorify someone who had attained liberation here on earth, this Gopakumar is speaking to someone in Vrindavan at this point. He's relating about when he was on Brahmaloka. Once, hearing the residents of Brahmaloka glorify someone who had attained liberation here on earth, I asked them about that amazing event. I heard from those all-knowing sages about the super excellence and rareness of liberation, and so I desired it myself. I then asked them how liberation could be attained. Many of the presiding goddesses of the Upanishads answered. So the word there is Devyaha, I think is the word, which can mean shining ones. The whole lot, this word Divya, Deva, the root of this is shining, actually. So godly is related to that, effulgent. So here apparently it's in the feminine, the word that refers to these particular personified Vedas, they're called the presiding goddesses. Many of the presiding goddesses of the Upanishads answered, joined by Shrutis and Smritis. They said that only by knowledge is liberation achieved and by no other means. But some Puranas and Agamas said gravely that this knowledge, difficult to obtain, is easily acquired by devotional service to the personality of Godhead. Some other Shrutis and Smritis indirectly showed agreement among themselves that by devotional service alone, properly done, liberation is easy to attain. Angry at not hearing those Shrutis and Smritis speak up, some of the great Upanishads and scriptures like the Agamas who follow in their footsteps openly affirm that devotional service is an independent cause of liberation. A few confidential Upanishads smiled and kept silent, along with some confidential major Agamas and Puranas. I think it's in this commentary, it mentions the Gopal Tapani Upanishad, which is directly, of course, about Krishna, Gopal Tapani Upanishad. So it's very confidential. In fact, most Vedic scholars will say, you know, it was made up by somebody later. So it goes on. A fierce debate then arose between the Agamas on one side and scriptures like certain Shrutis and Puranas on the other about whether or not liberation is achieved merely by chanting mantras that worship the personality of Godhead. Unable to tolerate the debate, the Puranas, Agamas, and Upanishads who had been silent covered their ears and left. So the idea here is that for these confidential Puranas and Agamas, they have great devotion to the Lord. And this discussion about whether chanting mantras to Krishna can give liberation, it was disturbing to them. It's like, Sid, why are you talking about this? It's so insignificant. Liberation. We don't even want to hear about this. Why are you wasting your time discussing these things? They covered their ears and left. Then the major Puranas and Upanishads became arbitrators. And so victory went to the Agamas. That pleased me very much. This reminds me of that pastime of Prabhupada where he became the arbiter when Tamal Krishna Maharaj was negotiating with Dai Nipan, right? Prabhupada sat back as like he was a neutral third party. So here the Upanishads are standing back as if they're neutral, but then they're judging. So they gave their victory went to the Agamas, in other words, the devotional scriptures. And Gopakumara says, that pleased me very much. Of course, he's a devotee. Discerning the inner mood of the Puranas, Agamas, and other scriptures who had left the debate, so they're standing off to the side now, these devotional scriptures, I pacified them with tactful praise and brought them back to the assembly. From those scriptures, the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Satvata Siddhanta, and other Agamas, and the foremost Shrutis, I respectfully asked about the truth of the matter, and they replied. So we even have a personified Srimad Bhagavatam, which is, I thought that was very interesting, because we say the Bhagavatam is not different from Krishna, but there's also the Bhagavatam person, apparently. The devotional scriptures said, now this is actually, there's a long discussion. They speak, I don't know how many, it's long. It's quite like 50, 70 verses, something. It's quite long. And it's all about liberation, basically, and the devotional perspective. So this is just the beginning. I'll just read a few of the things they say here. The devotional scriptures said, O dear one who have achieved the post of Brahma, this topic is more secret than a rare treasure. But we shall explain it to you because your abundant good qualities inspire us to speak freely. So this, the indication here is that you can't get this confidential knowledge unless you're qualified. You have to be very eager to receive it. We who are dedicated to the personality of God, his devotional service, may sometimes discuss liberation, but only to encourage people to reject it completely. When we speak of liberation, we condemn it and everything that goes with it. To describe the ultimate glories of devotional service, we may sometimes speak highly of moksha, liberation, but we do not intend to acclaim moksha, the final goal of spiritual discipline, because in moksha there is not even a trace of real happiness. Then there's a whole discussion of this, how there's really no happiness in liberation. It's compared, there are a couple of comparisons. One is it's like being in deep sleep. Sometimes, you know, there are different states of sleep. So in deep sleep, there's not even any dreaming. So you're completely unconscious. So sometimes you go to sleep and you just wake up. You don't remember anything. You think, wow, that was a great sleep. I was so out of it, I couldn't remember a thing. So that's like the happiness of liberation. There's no experience, basically, at all. But you're not suffering. So you think, well, that was nice. At least I wasn't suffering. So they continue, the so-called happiness of liberation, oh here it is, may be compared to the happiness of not being sick. Oh, I'm not sick, oh that's nice. Or the enjoyment of deep sleep. In fact, the very term liberation is a misnomer created by illusion, and it appeals only to the ignorant. From even a shadow of the Lord's name, if one somehow chants them but once, or merely if they enter the ears, liberation is easily attained. So that's from Brihad Bhagavatamrita. So in this verse today, there's some discussion about liberation. Indirectly, you might say, it says, some fortunate souls, kechit means some fortunate souls, have gotten relief from the fatigue of material life. So I thought that, well, that's interesting. What does that sound like? Liberation, doesn't it? Then it says, those rare souls, indifferent even to liberation, renounce the happiness of home and family. So do they like this liberation or not? Are they aspiring for it? So what seems to be implied here is they get it automatically. It's not like they want it. That's not what they're trying for. But they get it. They get freedom from the fatigue of material life by diving into the vast nectar ocean of your pastimes. So this is definitely directly a direct statement here. It said in the purport that these personified Vedas speaking here are directly glorifying devotional service. And I looked at the verse and I said, where does it talk about devotional service? I don't see a mention of devotional service. Well, it says, dive into the vast nectar ocean of your pastimes. So obviously, that's devotional service, diving into the nectar of Krishna's pastimes. So if you dive into the nectar of those pastimes, then you're liberated automatically. Mahamrita Magna Chitta, Prahlad Maharaj says, I'm absorbed in the ocean of ecstasy, so I don't need liberation. I don't need anything. I'm always happy in devotional service. So this is a characteristic of devotees. They're happy in devotional service. They don't think that there's some need for something else. In this section of the Brihadbhagavatamrita, there's all kinds of discussion about how liberation is a temporary situation. If one is really insistent that one can stay there for practically eternity, but generally people don't stay in that state of liberation. And different examples are given of different personalities. Now we know the four Kumaras, for example, they had already attained some kind of liberation. They were Brahman realized sages, but when they got the darshan of Lord Krishna, smelled his lotus feet, the fragrance of his feet, the tulsi and saffron from his feet, and they experienced some agitation. They weren't supposed to be agitated. They're in Brahman realized, shanti, shanti, shanti. But they became ashanti when they smelled Krishna's lotus feet. So we have their examples. And I came across one interesting verse in this context, if I can find it. Yeah, there are different examples that are given. One thing is that some are realized they can go on, or they're qualified in somehow to get the darshan of the Lord. And there are some who are not necessarily. They may be above the material energy, material world, in that sense liberated, but they still don't have the qualification for the Lord's darshan. So, this is from one commentary by Sanatana Goswami's own commentary on Brihadbhagavatamrita. He says, the three sages, these were sons of Lord Brahma. They're called Ekata, Dvita, and Trita, which I think basically means one, two, and three. That maybe Brahma ran out of names. He just said, you're one, you're two, and you're three. The three sages, Ekata, Dvita, and Trita, went to Shvetadweep and made a great effort to achieve darshan of the personality of Godhead. So they went to Shvetadweep, they were able to go there. But even though they were fixed in a level of Brahman realization virtually equal to that of the four Kumaras, they were unable to see the Lord. They were qualified for mukti, but not bhakti. So they, in a sense, you might say they tried to leave their Brahman position, but they couldn't advance out of it somehow. They weren't quite ready yet. And in this, I thought was interesting. This is from the Brihan Narasimha Purana relates how a fallen brahmana and a prostitute merged into the supreme. So this has to do with fasting on some Ekadasi or fasting on the Nrisimha's appearance day or something. I forget what it is. You know how you get these benedictions. They're all mentioned in these different mahatmyas. So in this Brihan Narasimha Purana, it tells this story. A fallen brahmana and a prostitute emerged into the supreme. They were given that liberation. And then took birth again as Prahlad Maharaj and his wife. How about that little piece of information? Prahlad Maharaj was merged into the supreme and left it. Well, these jivas, and they became Prahlad Maharaj and his wife. So many histories like these serve as evidence that the jiva continues its individual existence after liberation. So there's a point that comes out repeatedly that liberation is one reason that's not considered a great thing, is because you're not satisfied there. Even though so many sages are trying for it, they read the Upanishads and they think the Upanishads are glorifying liberation because some of the Upanishads do. So they try for that and they meditate for thousands and thousands of years or lifetimes to try to get that. But for the devotees, it's like so insignificant. It's not desirable at all. In fact, kaivalyam natakayate,
Prabodhananda Saraswati says, it's like hell. You can't serve Krishna there. What's the use? So, but the devotees there are at a completely different position. They're always merged in the nectar of devotional service. So I read this about the this analogy, like flocks of swans enjoying at your lotus feet. I was reminded of this nice sloka in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnot kirtana gana nartana kala pato jani brajita sadbhaktavali hamsa chakra madupa shreni viharas padam karna ananda kala dvanir vahatume jiva maru prangane Sri Chaitanya Dayanideta Valasal Lila Sudha Swarduni. So this is the Goswami Ashtak meter. So this is a glorification of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. And it's easier for me to remember the Sanskrit than the English, so I'll read the translation here. O my merciful Lord Chaitanya, may the nectarian Ganges waters of your transcendental activities flow on the surface of my desert-like tongue. Beautifying these waters, so the Lord Chaitanya's lilas are like the Ganges, nectarian Ganges. And beautifying these waters are the lotus flowers of singing, dancing, and loud chanting of Krishna's holy name, which are the pleasure abodes of unalloyed devotees. So there's the glorifying Krishna, singing, dancing, these are like lotus flowers flowing on the Ganges of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. And what are the devotees there enjoying among these lotus flowers? These devotees are compared to swans, ducks, and bees. The river's flowing produces a melodious sound that gladdens their ears. So it sounds just like a stream sometimes, a babbling brook. It's very pleasing. You can buy, of course, these electronic sounds to help you get to sleep if you want. You know. But this sound, the nectarian Ganges, the devotees listen to it and their ears are gladdened. The nectarian pastimes of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this is, devotees are absorbed in this. They're not thinking of liberation or anything else. That's their complete satisfaction. So I'll just read the translation again. My Lord, some fortunate souls have gotten relief from the fatigue of material life by diving into the vast nectar ocean of your pastimes, which you enact when you manifest your personal forms to propagate the unfathomable science of the self. These rare souls, indifferent even to liberation, renounce the happiness of home and family because of their association with devotees who are like flocks of swans enjoying at the lotus of your feet. Any discussions?
Why have we been inundated so much philosophy, especially in the system, all we got is liberation, liberation, liberation?
Why are we inundated in these times with talk of impersonalism, Brahman realization? Yeah, of course, many devotees had the experience before coming to Krishna consciousness of running into this teacher or that teacher, and that's as far as they go. Why is that? Because that's as far as you can go by speculating. You can't get Krishna. You have to accept the pure devotees. You get Krishna from the pure devotees. So until Prabhupada came and brought Krishna, he wasn't there because these others didn't have him. Even with material speculation, like scientists, they come, you know, with their speculation, they kind of get to Brahman, basically. In fact, some have observed and made shown this connection, that the ultimate philosophical conclusion of materialistic science is really a kind of oneness or impersonalism. So that's basically as far as you get. So unless you accept the authority of the pure devotees, you won't get beyond that. So that's their mercy. The pure devotees, they travel around and they give that. They make that sacrifice to bring people to a higher platform. By their example, they show What convinced people that Krishna was real was Prabhupada talking about Krishna. You hear his voice cracking in ecstasy when he's giving these early lectures in New York. You can see, here's someone who loves Krishna. Sometimes when I listen, I like listening to these early lectures of Prabhupada. He's really just a teacher. You can see how he's a teacher. He's got his students and he's teaching the ABCs, but with so much enthusiasm, so much the ecstasy is coming out. So you can see how, sometimes I think, these people, what are they understanding of Prabhupada? Because so many foreign things, you know, we, after so many years, we know all of these terms. But Prabhupada's just quoting these verses and throwing out all this Sanskrit, and he doesn't always explain everything he says. And sometimes I think, what are these people, you know, they're coming off the street half drugged, or, you know, whatever, their brains stuffed with all kinds of nonsense. But it's the potency came through, the conviction came through, the purity came through and changed them. So, of course, many of them also, they were hearing the same nonsense about oneness. That's sort of the default position. But somehow Prabhupada, because of who he was, because he was embodying Krishna, Mahabhagavata, he was able to change people. So that's where it comes from. It's the age of Kali, so impersonalism is going to have a strong foothold, but only by the power of the pure devotees can people be released from that trap, that snare, the last snare of Maya. That metaphor Prabhupada gives, like you're caught in a trap, like a bear trap, and you're stuck there in the middle of the woods, crying in the wilderness. That's people's situation in impersonalism. Only a pure devotee can release you from that. Something else? Maharaj? Oh, where's the... Oh, it's not working? Okay. Right. I was saying by speculation you can only get impersonal realization. You have to accept Shabda authority, basically. But Maharaj is saying that even you accept Shabda, as many impersonalists do, you still may not get to the Supreme Absolute Truth. So what would Prabhupada say? Therefore, you are unfortunate. That is your misfortune. You have to get Sukriti, you have to get the mercy of the pure devotees. The pure devotee, you have to somehow or other. But that, of course, that's a complicated, very complicated subject. Why do some persons get this or that? I think, well, what was my qualification to get the mercy of Prabhupada? I wasn't even in Mayavada. I hadn't even gotten that far yet. I was just a gross sense enjoyer. I hadn't even thought about spiritual life, basically. So somehow the mercy just comes. It's hard to explain. Causeless mercy, how it happens. Of course, there is a jnata sukriti, we accumulate. That's the explanation I've heard. Somehow or other, you get the touch of a pure devotee. Still, there's a Sanskrit word, yadrichaya, which basically means somehow or other. It doesn't really explain. But somehow or other, you get some jnata sukriti and you become a little inclined. Otherwise, you're stuck. Even you hear Shabda, you don't get it. You don't get the proper Shabda. You don't get the pure devotee. So you don't progress. Dimashnik? Oh, where does it explain anywhere which Upanishads are split? Or... Well, there are, just like in this purport today, there was, I think there was some mention. Although I know that sometimes it says, like Madhvacharya apparently quotes lots of things and he just says this is from the Upanishads and then doesn't say exactly where. Yeah, so he's accused sometimes of making it up by his philosophical enemies. I've always heard also, I think I mentioned this before, there's a joke among Vaishnavas, if you don't know where something's from, just say it's from the Padma Purana. Because it's so big, no one, who knows, you know. Yeah, so I don't know exactly. Sometimes references are given and sometimes they're not. And apparently sometimes Madhvacharya gives references, but if you look now, you can't find it there. So we just say, well, these things get lost over time. Madhvacharya?
Yeah, so, I mean, what you're telling me about the early days of Prabhupada and that people responding to his sort of emotional state. So I guess what I'm trying to think is that in order to essentially affect other people with this concept, it's you can't just dryly recite it or, yeah. You know, in other words, you've got to really personify it, essentially. And that's very rare. I mean, how many of us can really do that? I mean, I don't...
Well, there are different, of course, there are different levels. That's the whole idea. In fact, there's one nice purport where Prabhupada says how when the pure devotee is preaching, because his desire is so strong for that person to become Krishna conscious, then Krishna reciprocates from within the heart of that recipient and says basically, listen to this person. Inspires that person, listen to this person, because he's so much filled with the desire the compassion really, to bring this person to Krishna consciousness. So yes, we have different levels from the new, you know, from when we first come, we may have some conviction, and then of course, full conviction and full realization of a pure devotee. So there's a whole range. So according to how much we can personify bhakti ourselves, we're going to be able to influence other people. In fact, one thing that's interesting is that devotees who were somehow touched by Prabhupada and left Krishna consciousness, they've often made devotees. You hear stories like that. You know, this blue devotee told me, you know, I used to be Hare Krishna and told him something about it. And then this person goes to the temple and next thing, you know, they're out distributing books, and spreading Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada's Shakti is there so we can manifest it to some degree. And it has some potency. Whatever we have to try to use that. And yet, Dinabandhu, he was talking the other day how he was influenced by this particular devotee who was talking to him, saying you should be a brahmachari, and you're telling him, sounded like really heavy kind of stuff, you know. But it had an influence on him because the devotee had so much conviction about it. This is even a material concept, right? I mean, you can't sell a car unless you're, wow, this is such a great car, you know. That's a piece of junk, but you have to sound like it's really great. And if you don't have conviction, you can't convict anybody else. So that's why, of course, that comes through in Prabhupada's books also, page after page, 100% conviction. He doesn't say, well, I heard this. I'm not quite sure if it's true or not, but I'll tell you anyway. That's obviously not the Prabhupada's mode of presentation. It's 100%. This is the way it is. This is Krishna speaking, the absolute truth. So that comes through with so much power to transform others. Something else?
Oh. Yeah. I remember reading an article. It was actually a conversation between Prabhupada's godbrother Sridhar Swami and one of his disciples. And you were mentioning how sometimes it's Upanishads, some people say were added. So this disciple was presenting his doubt that, you know, Chaitanya Upanishad, we quote Chaitanya Upanishad, but that's not one of the Upanishads, this is added. And so his response was, Sridhar Swami's response was basically saying, why do you want to put your all your faith in some dry Upanishads? He said, why don't you accept the present acharyas? When they are giving their realizations, you hear their realizations, and why bother to even try to hear the realizations or whatever, dry, using the word dry explanations of, you know, what the Upanishads do. So I thought what you were saying about how Prabhupada gave us all that, you know, and that was Mahaj was making the point. So what? They may be added, Chaitanya Upanishad might be added, or this Upanishad may be added. That's fine, you know. Why have that faith in there and have the faith in the present acharyas who are actually giving you devotion and love for Krishna?
Of course, our main acharya is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And what did he taught Srimad Bhagavatam? Divyangaprabhu?
Like Charles was saying, who can express this the way Prabhupada did? And that's why Prabhupada left us the books. And he told us a long time ago, he said, our preaching will have no efficacy without the books. Mm-hmm. Why? Because if a guy met me in the street, asked me something, what am I going to tell him? I said, here, read this. So it's all been made so easy for us. Mm-hmm. Just like you said, on those 66 lectures, when Prabhupada speaks, he's like, the way he speaks is amazing. He's like practically yelling, you know, and he's, like you said, he's quoting all these things that nobody knew, you know, and it's just amazing to hear his tenor. It's the way he was just ecstatic about it.
I'm always amazed at how Prabhupada didn't get distracted either with all the background noises going on, kids playing outside and running inside.
He's a Calcutta man.
All kinds of things going on. Prabhupada just kept going. Amazing.
Well, it just seems like, too, that all these, I mean, when you hear these people speak, I'm talking about Alan Watts, others, I mean, it gets to be such a mush, you know, such a gobbledygook, and then finally you meet a devotee who can actually explain a complete philosophy, and I think all of us have had this experience that, you know, first, you're not this body, oh, you know, and then there's so many reasons why, and then reincarnation, oh, yeah, reincarnation, yeah, blah, blah. And then karma, oh yeah, right. You know, there's all these pieces to the puzzle fall together. And it's like, at that point, what else are you going to do? I mean, you know, you got to join.
A very pioneering devotee, Chit Sukananda Prabhu, he asked Srila Prabhupada early on, well, who are the speakers, who's speaking the Ishopanishad? And Prabhupada gave the same, the Vedas personified.
Uh-huh.
And as who's the Vedas personified, then there are instructions of Prabhupada to Jadarani Mataji of some have beards, some don't have beards. It sounded a lot like what you were suggesting. They were just great sages who were totally infused with the Upanishads. A little local color from the 60s. Yesterday I gave some local color from the 50s. In this, today's the 60s day. And I had a lot of personal, I mean, I was a sort of archetypical situation of that kind of thing that I was taking session or whatever you want to call it, the trip, we can say, the one that really threw me way off. This is the same time when I was interacting with Srila Prabhupada in 1966. And there was this guy, I have this documented, I have a hippie newspaper that I published, and I can show it to you, so anyone who's interested, and the cover of it has this artwork by this guy Ron Lawson. It's so Mayavad, and you can just see it in the artwork on the cover of this newspaper. And this same Ron Lawson was the one that, if it's not too risque to say, he turned me on to the hallucinogen, the LSD. And this was an overdose. I really got into trouble with that one. And while that was going on, he came right up to me and he started whispering in my ear, Tatvamasi, you are the one. You know, it's like, so we got a very heavy overdose, not only of LSD, but of Mayavad philosophy.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai.